Welcome to Psych Revise, your A-level psychology podcast. I'm your host, and today we're diving deep into one of the most fascinating and practically relevant topics in the OCR specification, environmental psychology. This is component 03, and it's a topic that genuinely changes how you see the world around you. Whether you're sitting on a crowded bus, studying in a noisy library, or walking through a well-designed park, environmental psychology is happening to you right now. So let's get into it. By the end of this episode, you'll be able to explain the key research studies with the Precision Examiner's Reward, apply psychological theory to real-world design problems, evaluate the research using OCR's specific issues and debates framework, and tackle both Part A and Part B questions with confidence. Let's start with the big picture. Environmental psychology is the scientific study of the bidirectional relationship between people and their physical environment. And that word, bidirectional, is crucial. The environment shapes our behavior, yes, but our behavior also shapes the environment. This two-way relationship is at the heart of everything in this topic. Examiners love it when candidates demonstrate they understand this dynamic rather than treating it as a one-way street. The topic breaks down into three major areas: environmental stressors, things like noise, temperature, and crowding; territory and personal space, including Altman's model and Newman's defensible space; and ergonomics, the design of environments to optimize human performance and well-being. Let's work through each one. First up, environmental stressors. The key study here is Glass and Singer from 1972. They wanted to investigate the effects of noise on task performance, and specifically whether perceived control over that noise made a difference. Their participants were split into groups. Some heard loud, unpredictable bursts of noise while completing cognitive tasks, things like proofreading and solving puzzles. Others heard the same noise but were told they could press a button to stop it at any time. Crucially, almost none of them actually pressed the button. But here's the fascinating result. The group who merely believed they had control performed significantly better on the tasks and showed lower physiological stress responses. They made fewer errors on proofreading tasks and persisted longer on unsolvable puzzles. What does this tell us? It tells us that it's not just the noise itself that causes stress. It's the perceived lack of control. This is a really important distinction for your exam. The concept of cognitive control is central here. When people feel they can manage or predict a stressor, its psychological impact is dramatically reduced. For your Part A questions, make sure you can state the aim, describe the procedure, and give the specific findings. For Part B evaluation, you'd link this to the debate of determinism. The environment doesn't mechanically determine behavior. Cognitive appraisal mediates the effect. Now let's talk about temperature. The key researcher here is Craig Anderson, whose 1989 meta-analysis examined the relationship between temperature and aggression. Anderson analyzed data from multiple studies and found a consistent positive correlation. As ambient temperature increases, so does aggressive behavior. He found this pattern in crime statistics. Violent crime rates were higher in hotter months and hotter cities, and in laboratory studies. The relationship was particularly strong for temperatures in the uncomfortable but not extreme range, roughly 27 to 32 degrees Celsius. At extreme heat, aggression actually leveled off, possibly because people become too lethargic to act aggressively. This is known as the negative effect escape model. At extreme temperatures, the desire to escape the discomfort overrides aggressive impulses. For your exam, the key detail to remember is that Anderson used a meta-analysis, a study of studies, which gives it high ecological validity because it draws on real-world data. However, you should also be ready to evaluate this. Correlation does not imply causation. Hotter months also mean more people are outside, more alcohol is consumed, and there are more opportunities for conflict. These are confounding variables that make it difficult to isolate temperature as the sole cause of aggression. Now, crowding and density. This is where one of the most dramatic studies in all of psychology comes in. John Calhoun's 1962 rat study. Calhoun created what he called a rat universe, a large enclosure with enough food and water to support 48 rats comfortably. He then allowed the population to grow to 80 rats. What happened next was extraordinary and disturbing. The rats developed what Calhoun called a behavioral sink, a catastrophic breakdown in normal social behavior. Dominant males became hyper-aggressive and territorial. Females stopped building nests and abandoned their young. Some males became hypersexual and indiscriminate. Infant mortality reached 96%. The social fabric of the rat colony completely collapsed. Now, here's the critical distinction you must make in your exam, and this is one of the most common mistakes candidates make. Calhoun's study was about density, the physical number of animals per unit of space. But the psychological concept we're really interested in is crowding, the subjective psychological perception of having insufficient space. You can be in a high-density environment and not feel crowded. Think of a concert you're enjoying. And you can feel crowded in a relatively low-density environment, like when someone sits right next to you in an empty cinema. Density is objective, crowding is subjective. Examiners will award marks specifically for candidates who make this distinction clearly. Moving on to territory and personal space. Erwin Altman's 1975 model of territoriality distinguishes between three types of territory. Primary territories are spaces owned and controlled exclusively by an individual or group, your bedroom, your home. These are the most important to us psychologically, and intrusions into primary territory provoke the strongest responses. Secondary territories are semi-public spaces that a person or group uses regularly but doesn't own exclusively, your usual seat in a classroom, a regular table at a cafe. Tertiary territories are fully public spaces, a park bench, a bus seat, where anyone can use the space, but people still mark temporary ownership through personal belongings. The exam relevance here is significant. Candidates who can distinguish between these three types and give specific examples earn the precise AO1 marks that Part A questions demand. A common mistake is to describe only primary territory and ignore the nuances of secondary and tertiary. Now let's talk about Newman's defensible space model from 1972. Oscar Newman was an architect and urban planner who studied crime rates in New York housing projects. He found that certain design features dramatically reduced crime and increased residents' sense of safety and community. He identified four key features. First, territoriality, clear physical demarcations between public and private space, like fences, different paving materials, and changes in ground level, which communicate ownership and responsibility. Second, natural surveillance, design features that allow residents to observe the spaces around their homes, like windows overlooking communal areas, good lighting, and clear sight lines. Third, image, the physical appearance of the environment. Well-maintained, clean spaces signal that residents care about their area and are watching, deterring potential offenders. Fourth, milieu, the broader social and geographical context of the housing development, including proximity to safe areas and community facilities. Newman applied these principles to compare two adjacent housing projects in New York, Brownsville and Van Dyke Houses. Van Dyke Houses, with its high-rise towers and anonymous communal spaces, had significantly higher crime rates than Brownsville, which had lower-rise buildings with clearer territorial boundaries. This is a brilliant real-world application, and examiners love it when candidates can cite this comparison specifically. Let's now move to ergonomics, the science of designing environments to optimize human performance, comfort, and well-being. The key study here is Roger Ulrich's 1984 study on the effects of natural views on patient recovery. Ulrich examined hospital records for patients recovering from cholecystectomy, that's gallbladder surgery, over a 9-year period. He compared patients whose room window looked out onto a brick wall with patients whose window looked out onto a natural scene, trees and greenery. The results were striking. Patients with the natural view had shorter postoperative hospital stays, on average 7.96 days compared to 8.70 days. They required fewer doses of strong analgesic medication. They received fewer negative evaluative comments from nurses, and they had slightly lower scores on measures of postoperative complications. This study is remarkable for its ecological validity. It used real patients in a real hospital with a natural experiment design. For your exam, you need to know the specific figures. The sample involved 46 matched pairs of patients. The study ran from 1972 to 1981, and the difference in hospital stay was statistically significant. This study has had enormous practical impact on hospital design worldwide, which makes it highly relevant to the usefulness debate in OCR's Issues and Debates framework. Now let's shift to exam technique. This is where marks are won and lost. For Part A questions worth 10 marks, you are being assessed purely on AO1, knowledge and understanding. The command words will be things like describe or outline. Your job is to explain what the research is, what was done, and what was found. Do not evaluate. Do not say, however, this study has weaknesses. That is wasting precious time on marks you cannot earn in Part A. Structure your answer around the aim of the study, the method and sample, the key findings, and the conclusion. Use precise details, names, dates, statistics, examiners are looking for accuracy and detail. For Part B questions, worth 15 marks, you are being assessed on AO3, evaluation. The question will name a specific debate from OCR's Issues and Debates framework, things like reductionism, determinism, nature versus nurture, individual versus situational explanations, or usefulness. Your answer must be structured around that specific debate. A common mistake is to write generic evaluation, this study had a small sample size, without linking it to the named debate. Instead, you should say something like, Calhoun's study is reductionist because it reduces complex human social behavior to the findings of a rat study, ignoring the role of cognitive appraisal and cultural factors in human responses to density. That earns marks. Generic criticism does not. For suggest questions, you must propose a practical intervention and explicitly justify it using psychological terminology. For example, to reduce stress in an open plan office, managers could install sound masking systems and provide employees with noise-canceling headphones, giving them perceived control over their acoustic environment. Research by Glass and Singer, 1972, demonstrates that perceived control, rather than the absence of noise itself, is the critical variable in reducing stress responses. Notice how that answer names the research, uses the term perceived control, and explains the mechanism. That is what earns full marks. Now let's do a quick-fire recall quiz. Cover your notes and see how many of these you can answer. Ready? 1. What is the key difference between density and crowding? Density is objective, the number of people per unit of space. Crowding is subjective, the psychological perception of insufficient space. 2. In Glass and Singer's 1972 study, what was the key independent variable? Whether participants believed they had control over the noise, not whether the noise was actually present or absent. 3. Name Newman's 4 features of defensible space. Territoriality, natural surveillance, image, and milieu. 4. What did Ulrich find about patients with a natural view compared to those with a brick wall view? They had shorter hospital stays, 7.96 days versus 8.70 days, and required fewer strong analgesic medications. 5. What are Altman's 3 types of territory? Primary, secondary, and tertiary. 6. What term did Calhoun use to describe the social breakdown in his rat study? The behavioral sink. How did you do? If you got all 6, you're in excellent shape. If you missed some, go back and review those specific studies. They're the ones most likely to appear in Part A questions. Let's wrap up with a quick summary of the key takeaways from today's episode. Environmental psychology examines the bidirectional relationship between humans and their physical environment. The 3 main areas are environmental stressors, noise, temperature, crowding, territory and personal space, and ergonomics. The critical distinction between density and crowding is one of the most commonly tested points in this topic. Glass and Singer showed that perceived control is more important than the stressor itself. Newman's defensible space model has direct, practical applications in urban design. And Ulrich's 1984 study provides compelling evidence that natural environments promote psychological and physical well-being. For your exam, always link your evaluation to OCR's specific issues and debates. Always use precise details, names, dates, statistics, and in suggest questions, always explain the psychological mechanism behind your proposed intervention. That's all for today's episode of PsychRevise. Good luck with your revision. You've got this. See you next time.